What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. So I've been in Chicago for a little over 18 months now. But for those who don't know, this is actually my second time living in the city. I lived here for 4 years between 2010 and 2014 as well. And those first couple years, I lived in a housing cooperative, aka a co-op. Now, I don't know what you picture when you think of co-ops, but when I used to try to describe it to people, they thought I was living in a commune.
I lived in a cooperative house when I was in undergrad at Michigan State, so I got some of the same reactions that you did. And it was maybe compounded by the fact that we had solar panels on the roof and a compost bin and organic veggie garden. So people got the idea that we were sort of a hippie hut pretty early on.
Yeah. This is Olivia Dimmer. She's a freelance writer, and she's been reporting on co-ops in the city for the Chicago Sun-Times.
Cooperative housing is this model of shared ownership where a group of people jointly own a home, either through shares or another mechanism laid out in their charter. Everyone gets their own room and they share common spaces and the responsibilities of owning a home.
So yeah, not all co-ops have vegetable gardens and solar panels. Sometimes you live in a room in a house. Other times, folks buy into an apartment building and they have their own unit. There's no one way to do it, really. But I want to note here that what we're not talking about is a condo HOA. Here, there are really no standard guidelines, legally or interpersonally. We'll get into that a little bit later. But given the cost of housing right now, there are a lot of good reasons to get into this type of living situation.
It's a model that can lend itself sometimes to a lower cost of living and then also a sense of community, which is what folks that I've spoken to in the story were really passionate about.
For me, sharing the kitchen and the bathroom was a little stressful. But yeah, having that community was gold. There's always somebody home to debrief your day with, turn the lights off if you forgot, and just pick up where you left off. And the stakes were lower because they're not necessarily your spouse or your family. So yeah, as you can see, me and Olivia are both really into this. We started our co-op jam session, so to speak, by getting into what makes co-ops different from more traditional homeownership.
In general, cooperative housing is going to be a little bit more DIY. It's going to require a little bit more participation from some of the residents. So you might, instead of hiring out lawn care, you might do that yourself. You might figure out chores with your neighbors in an equitable way.
Okay.
So a little bit different, but some overlap for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like a lot more participatory.
Yes.
And close quarters.
Very close. Yeah, you get to know your neighbors for sure, which was a plus for most of the folks that I spoke to.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit more about that setup. What's private? What's shared? How is it run? Yeah, get into that a little bit.
So it really depends on the people who founded the co-op because they really get to decide the rules and regulations around their living situation. For the folks that I spoke to who are in established co-ops, that meant having their own room, their own personal bedroom, but sharing bathrooms sometimes, sharing living rooms, libraries, backyards, gardens, rooftops, sharing a kitchen, sharing all of the kitchen tools, and also sharing food. So they would have a fully stocked pantry, fresh food and veggies, and sometimes house meals as well, where everybody sits down and shares one meal together.
Okay. So tell me about ownership. How does that normally look in a co-op?
So usually when you buy into a cooperative housing situation, you buy into a share of the house itself. So you are a part owner, but you're not an owner of a specific room or property in the same way that you might be if you bought a condo unit or an apartment unit, if that makes sense.
Okay. But you do, at least while you're living there, you have a shared ownership model, right?
Yes,
you are
absolutely.
Owning...
Yes, absolutely. You have a say in how the house is run. You have a say in repairs, remodeling, the same way that you would have a say if you actually owned it outright. And it depends on each cooperative model. Some folks buy in with a share that can be a couple of $100s. Some folks buy in with a share that can be as much as $90,000, which is one of the cooperatives that I spoke to for this story. So it really depends. It's really customizable depending on the situation.
Okay. Now, this is something people usually associate with 20-somethings, college students. I was in my 20s when I lived in a co-op. You said you were in college. Tell me about the demographic that you talk to, though, because that's not necessarily the case for those folks, right?
Right. So I spoke to a cooperative in Hyde Park, which is part of the Cumbia network of cooperatives.
Yes.
And while a lot of University of Chicago students do live there, they're not specifically for University of Chicago students.
Mm-hmm.
One of the residents that I spoke to there, Peter, he just recently welcomed his first child into the home and is raising his baby in the cooperative. There are all different sorts of folks, young and old, that live in cooperatives, but certainly college might be most folks' entry point into cooperative living.
A big part of this conversation is affordable housing, which is why it attracts oftentimes all different kinds of people, maybe especially people early in their career, you know, phase. But, you know, the way things are going now, you know, all
the
kinds of people.
The rent is too dang high.
Okay. So, yeah, any kind of person could be coming to this. This is a problem all over the country. Chicago is no different. How does affordability factor into this sort of alternative way of living?
Yeah. So one of the folks that I spoke to, Peter Reamer, who is a resident at Bowers House in Hyde Park, part of the Cumbia Cooperative Network that I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge house. There's 18 rooms, which range in price from $450 to $600 per month, depending on size. So definitely there, it's a lot more affordable. You get access to a huge backyard. There's co-working spaces, a library. And then on top of that, residents pay another $200 to $240 a month for food. And that includes a fully stocked pantry, fresh veggies, house meals, shared dinners that the whole house gets together for. One of the other folks that I spoke to, Dave Glowatz, he's the founder of the Logan Square Cooperative Soul House. They have a model where each resident buys into a share of the cooperative, which is about $90,000. And that gives you a 3-bedroom unit in the building. So when you compare sale price for a 3-bedroom unit in Logan Square, I don't know how much it is off the top of my head, but I could almost certainly bet that it's more than $90,000.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, and I think you did say, you know, they at least said that it is more than $90,000 in the reporting that you did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know you also talked to a couple, Amy Jewell and Toby Mitchell. Affordability was their primary motivation. Tell me a little bit about them.
Yeah. So Amy Jewell and Toby Mitchell are two folks who moved to Chicago and kind of kicked around the idea of starting a cooperative. And now they're in the process of finding other like-minded families so that they can purchase a building together. One of their biggest things was being pushed out of their neighborhood in Humboldt Park. And they were actually booted out of their last apartment because their landlord wanted to renovate and then raise prices.
Yeah.
So for them, affordability was the major driver of trying to find other folks to get together and buy a cooperative with.
Yeah. This setup would not work for everybody, but it could be a great option for a lot of people. Again, we're talking about affordability. You do say in your reporting that there are barriers that would keep more people from considering this type of model. In the case of David Glowax, who you talked about, tell me what were some of the barriers that he ran into?
Yeah, so the thing that can be really tricky with cooperatives is financing. So when you buy into a share of a cooperative, you're not technically buying a unit or a piece of real estate, which can serve as collateral for a loan. So banks tend to be a little skeptical of those types of things. So in Soul House's case, unless you have $90,000 floating around, it might be hard to buy into that building.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, $90,000 is still way under market value for a 3-bedroom in that area. And they have payment plans and other ways to figure that out. But cooperative housing is not a super common arrangement. So banks sometimes don't really know how to deal with that.
Yeah. And then if you wanted to, say, secure a loan, you know, that's housing based for that $90,000 buy-in, that's a buy-in. You know, you're not buying actual real estate.
You don't have actual collateral, so the bank's going to look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah. Like, you want me to give you this money so you can buy into this
or
thing?
Yeah.
Exactly. And how do we benefit? Yeah. You also talked to somebody who represents housing co-ops. Tell me about Sarah Kaplan.
Yeah, so Sarah Kaplan is an attorney who deals with cooperative housing issues in Chicago, and she's also the co-founder of the Hub Housing Cooperative in Marshall Square.
Okay.
And she said that because most cooperatives have to register as nonprofits, they usually only qualify for commercial loans, and those commercial loans usually have higher interest rates than mortgages, is what she said.
Hmm. So, I mean, she's a lawyer. How did she say people are getting around this? What are some of the ways that she's working with folks for this?
Yeah, so folks can buy a building independently on a mortgage if their mortgage has good terms, and they can technically rent it out to the cooperative entity.
Ah.
So there are some kind of legal workarounds that people should definitely work with a lawyer to figure out.
Let's talk about Linda Becker. Linda bought a house with friends, and it seems to really be working out for her. She seems to have gotten through, maybe used some loopholes, some, you know, kind of things to help that work out. Tell me about her.
Yeah, so in the case of Linda Becker, she bought a two flat with her best friend from college. She said that the arrangement really worked out well for them. They raised kids in the building. It was really fantastic. Unfortunately, her friend ended up needing to relocate for work. So the arrangement they worked out was that Linda bought back her friend's unit and now owns the whole building. But she said that the arrangement was really great while it lasted and allowed them to own a home in a part of the city that they really loved.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds like a really beautiful situation. It sounds like they did a lot of sharing, a lot of caring, and really were on the same page. Tell me about some of the more popular, those sound like kind of private, you know, individual situations. Tell me about some of the more popular co-ops in the city that people, if they want to try this lifestyle out, not really ready to start something themselves, but they just want to move into something and see how it feels. What are some of the co-ops that you ran into in your reporting?
Yeah, it seems like the Cumbia Network of Cooperatives, which is in kind of Hyde Park in the Bronzeville area, is really well established. They have, you know, a governing body. They have lots of houses. They meet up regularly for activities. So if you're really looking to get involved with an established cooperative system, that might be a good place to look.
I know there's one. I live in Pilsen. I know there's one.
There
down
is
over
one
there.
In Pilsen. Yeah. I reached out to them for the story and they said thanks, but no thanks. We're really busy with stuff right now. They're trying to expand.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is like a lot of these cooperatives, it's sort of a if you know, you know,
yes,
kind of thing. And if you don't know, you might not ever know that you're walking by a cooperative building.
Yeah. No, that's true. That was definitely true for the house I lived in. There were three houses in that co-op and two of them, they looked like straight up houses. You know, there was no signage necessarily, or if there was, it wasn't anything that was so prominent, you know, that you'd be like, okay, what is this now?
Right. It's not super obvious, but Chicago does have a pretty healthy, if not low-key, cooperative scene if you know where to look.
Okay. Now, if a person does go to visit some of these already existing co-ops, and none of them really feel like a good fit, they're like, actually, yeah, I do want to start my own thing. I know you wrote about some suggestions for taking that route, for going off on your own and starting your own cooperative situation. What are the top maybe two or three tips that came out of the suggestions that you came up with?
Yeah, the main one really seems to be to think through how you want to run the cooperative. Sit down with the people who
and
might...
do that in advance.
In advance,
yes.
Definitely, way in advance. Sit down with the people who might one day become your housemates, your neighbors, put it into a charter, write down guiding documents on how everything is going to go, you know, from finances to chores to how you're going to resolve conflicts. That's what Linda Becker did with her best friend from college. They sat down for hours and hammered all this stuff out. And it really is worth it to get that figured out before you move in mm-hmm. and to be proactive so that way you're not trying to solve problems on the fly.
Yeah. You know, the co-op that I moved into, and maybe you had a similar experience, it was already established. I mean, it was at that time the oldest ongoing co-op in the city. It's called Stone Soup Co-op for anyone listening who might know about it. So, they already had their established, you know, practices and things set up, but they made that very clear to me during the membership process. And so I think if you haven't already started yours, I like that advice, you know, kind of like figure it out before you start. But then once you're already established, make sure everybody know what's up. before they enter into that membership process because it can be invasive and long.
Absolutely. It's also super important to have a clear exit strategy because that's where a lot of conflicts can come up. Mm. So if somebody buys into a co-op and then they need to move, you need to lay out really clearly how that can happen in a sustainable way so the cooperative can continue.
Okay. Yeah.
One last tip that I have is to talk to other successful cooperatives and get their advice. One of the guiding principles of cooperative housing is, you guessed it, cooperation. So they're usually really excited to talk about it and can offer documents, templates, or point you to lawyers, point you to real estate agents or financing options that they've used in the past.
Yeah. You know, our co-op was, it was this nonprofit organization also, right? And so there's the rules of that in addition to whatever housing rules that you have to follow, fair housing, right? So when you want to membership someone, you can't be discriminating. You know, like different things like that, you know, and that's a part of, you know, there's all these things because there isn't clear guidance, things that have to marry together, you know, it's for you to figure this thing out.
Totally. You know, cooperative housing, like you said, isn't for everyone. It's a little bit more DIY and might require a little bit more time and effort and require you to be a little bit more involved with your neighbors and the management of your home than just buying into an apartment or renting somewhere. But when it's done right, it really seems like a great way to save money, provide a path to homeownership, and build a sense of community with the people around you.
Olivia Dimmer is a freelance writer. Thank you so much, Olivia.
Thanks, Erin.
You can read Olivia's reporting about co-ops and more. For that, you can go to chicago.suntimes.com. And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve edits the show. Brennan Banaszak is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.